Welcome to the EduGals podcast. We are your co-hosts, Rachel Johnson
and Katie Atwell. We are here to bring you tips and tricks to help you integrate technology into your classroom.
In this episode, we are joined by an amazing special guest this week, Caitlin Kemp.
We're going to be asking her some questions about her experience in the virtual secondary school and some of the things that she's learned that she's going to bring with her into in-person learning.
Let's get started. This week, Katie and I are super excited to be joined by special guest, Caitlin Kemp. So we know Caitlin really, really well. We've been colleagues with her for a number of years. And so she's a secondary teacher from Ontario who taught in the virtual secondary school last year. And so is coming from a wealth of kind of experience from the virtual world and is returning to in-person learning this coming school year. And so we want to start off by saying welcome to the podcast, Caitlin.
Thank you. Long time listener. Super excited to be here.
And we are excited to have you.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself, Caitlin?
Sure, I guess. Yeah. So as you mentioned, Rachel, I'm a teacher in Ontario. I've been teaching. This is my 10th year, going into my 10th year. So hitting a decade. And last year I volunteered, actually. I was one of those crazy people who volunteered to teach virtually. I had taught with our e-learning campus for about 6 years. And so I knew I had a lot of the skills. I had also done my Google certification. So I knew I was like solid enough that it wouldn't be a huge change for me. And then so that I volunteered and then spent the year doing virtual learning, but really missed seeing students and seeing colleagues. So I chose to come back to in person this year. Outside of work, I've been married for 11 years. My husband is not in education, though, so that's kind of nice. And then I have two small children. So I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. So they keep me busy during the summers as well.
Okay. So Caitlin, we asked you here today because we're hoping you can share with us some of your learning over the past year. It has been nuts. We've all kind of had to figure it out as we go, but you bring with you such a wealth of knowledge in terms of actually living that for an entire year. So we'd love to hear about some of what you've learned throughout the year and what we can do as educators.
So a little bit about like the situation. So in Ontario and in the board that I work in, we did quadmesters. I think that was a situation for a lot of schools. And so we had really long classes and we're going to continue to have that this year. And so I think most teachers will tell you they learned how to chunk really well, like to chunk that learning so that students weren't doing the same thing all the time. And so that's something I learned and picked up some strategies on how to make it more engaging online. So different like tools, different activities. I love Jamboards. So
so do we.
Yeah. So I would make those. And like what I did, so while the classes were super long, what I did like is I felt like I had the space to connect more with my students. I didn't feel rushed to try and get through content because we had such a long time and I knew I couldn't get them to focus for 3 or 2 hours, whatever it was. I felt like I had more time to do minds on activities or to like do a fun non-subject based Kahoot or to do some mindfulness. And so our class, like I was able to chunk our classes around different activities, doing wellness, things that I knew I was supposed to be doing as an educator, but always felt rushed in my shorter classes to make space for those and cover content. And now I'm like, oh, I got 2 hours. Of course, I'm going to do some mindfulness. Of course, I'm going to do a minds on activity. I'm going to do this fun little Jamboard or a Kahoot. And I felt like I had space for that.
Yeah.
So that was definitely something that I learned in the virtual world. And I think will definitely be coming back with me this year as well.
Nice. And may I ask what you use for your mindfulness?
I use Headspace. Yes. So they've got a teacher resource. And last year, they let teachers have it for free. I don't know if they're going to still do that this year. But I used Headspace because it was, they were very mindful about teaching people how to be mindful. And so we could go through things with our students that were short, and they were just teaching kids how to be present and in the moment.
I love Headspace and got into it last year. I think having that sort of little bit of space, and I love the fact that you can do a 1 minute meditation if you want, like just a minute. And it's amazing how much more relaxed you feel after you go through and do that. And so I'm pretty sure Headspace is free for educators. I think Katie and I have talked about it a few times on the podcast before. So we'll make sure we'll put that link in the show notes for you. But yeah, Headspace is a great one. And I agree with you. I think it's really kind of interesting that the silver lining to these bigger, longer learning blocks is that we can actually do more things with our students that are more focused on who they are as people rather than forcing just, you know, more curriculum down their throats, basically.
Yeah.
And I know most administrators and like department leads this year were talking about figuring out the key learnings, focus on those, and then be building community. Like the idea that there's no curriculum police. If you don't cover every little specific expectation, that's fine. Get the overarching ideas. And so that was very freeing this year to be like, okay, what do I absolutely need to cover? Let's hone in on that, make sure they've got those skills, those concepts, and then let's make space to talk about what's going on in your lives, make sure that our mental health and even our physical health is fine, like that we're doing okay. We're swimming. Some people were just surviving, other people were not so much, but and like just to, because I felt like a lot of our virtual students were very isolated, we wanted to do our best to build community. And so being free from trying to do every little specific expectation and then being able just to focus on the main ideas was really, really good too.
And may I ask how the students reacted to some of the mindfulness? Because sometimes it's like nervous laughter, like, what are we doing? And then some will like really embrace it. So how did it go?
Yeah. The first time they were like, what is this? Why are we doing this in English class? But I tried it initially and it wasn't like every day. It was more like, okay, you know, let's practice this out, or I'm feeling stressed, or maybe that was a really deep concept we covered. And the more we did it, the more they started to appreciate it. I got some feedback from students saying, thank you for taking the time. You know, like I was really stressed that day, especially if you could, some of the minds on activities I would do were just to gauge where they were at. Like, how are we feeling today? Right. You can do that. The polls. I know you guys have talked about this before, like doing polls or using Jamboard or other programs to gauge where your students are at. And so some days where I got a lot of kids that were like red or yellow, we were going to do some mindfulness that day. Yeah. Yeah. And so they liked it in the end. At first, I think it was odd for them because they hadn't really done it a lot, but I think more and more staff, more teachers are bringing it into their classroom. So it's becoming less weird.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I like it.
I do love that you mentioned about like the curriculum police, right? And not feeling the need to cover every single specific little expectation. I think that's a big sort of thing for, I think more so for math and science teachers who are like, I have to teach this, like all of the curriculum, or else they're not going to be prepared for next year. Because a lot of it does build on. I know you're in English, right? So mostly an English teacher. So it's a bit more kind of based on skill building, right? Versus kind of that knowledge building piece. And so just even mentioning that and really taking a look at your curriculum, I think is where you need to start. And what are I like the modern classrooms framework where it's like looking through your curriculum and going, what are the absolute must-dos that students need to do and need to understand in order to be able to move on to the next course? And then what are the nice to know kind of things that can be added in if you have time?
I actually did do the Modern Classrooms mentorship program this summer, and that was really helpful. I teach one of the courses I teach is in the transitions program. And so a lot of times we have attendance issues or we have behavioral issues, students who are physically present, but just not there that day. And so being able to look at my curriculum and say, okay, these are the like absolute, like you need to do these things in order for you to be ready for the next grade. That's it. And that was helpful for me to be able to have that in my head. I don't necessarily tell my students, but I like know in my head, this is okay. This is what we need to cover. You need to get through this. Yeah, it was definitely something I enjoyed about Modern Classroom.
Yeah, and knowing that, you know, some of our students going into grade 11, they've only had one real semester of traditional school. Knowing that, I feel like, you know, I think we need to carry on with this whole, let's really look at the curriculum And let's concentrate on getting these kids comfortable in school, which is no longer comfortable. Like there is no norms anymore.
And this year's it's still not normal, right? Like we're still in pandemic mode. We're still in pandemic learning. There's still, you know, another wave coming. So yeah, I think that the learning that we've been doing as educators the last year and a half is definitely going to need this fall.
Yeah, no, definitely. What advice do you have to some of the newer teachers who are just getting into the profession in this madness? Based on kind of your learning last year and your leadership role, et cetera, what advice do you have for them?
Oh, I got some advice for you guys. Here you go. If you're a new teacher, listen up. So I think ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help. A lot of teachers want to help you. And I found what happened a lot this year with the push to online learning is that sharing happened. People who maybe were a little bit more possessive of their resources were not as possessive. They felt like they could share. And our board uses the G Suite. So like Google Drive makes it so easy to share resources. So ask if you need help, if you need resources. We're all doing it right now. We're all looking to revamp our curriculum with trying to make things more culturally responsive, trying to build community. Like, so ask. Maybe find a mentor, that one teacher who it may be a little bit more amenable, like more willing to help you, because there's some staff right now who are overwhelmed. They'll help, but they don't necessarily want to mentor. But if you can find a mentor, latch on and take. And like learning how to best leverage your technology, because I think there's so much out there. There's so many resources. Our board's a little picky about what you're allowed to use and what you're not. But, you know, try out different things, but figure out the ones that work best for your students and for your learners, because not all of them are going to engage with everything and continue to use those, right? So make sure that you're not just using technology for the sake of technology. I think we get a lot of new teachers who just want to use the newest thing. But, you know, that's not always technology for the technology's sake. It's not great,
no.
Right? We need to use it properly in our classrooms.
I think it really is easy to go down that bit of a rabbit hole, right? Where it's like, ooh, shiny new technology. I really want to try this just for the sake of trying it. So I definitely agree with you. Like, go and find your tools. It's almost like you kind of have to take a look at the EdTech tools that are out there and fill your little toolbox with the ones that you're going to use frequently. You don't need a huge amount of them, just the ones that are really going to serve the right purposes for yourself and your students.
And don't like keep switching it up on them, right? Like let them get used to the tool, right? It's not always good to have like a new thing each week for them, because that they have to learn it. And our students are pretty good at learning new technology, but it's nice for them to become proficient, right? If you use the same thing over and over again, use it differently, but you can use the same tools.
That's great advice. I like that.
I love the advice to go and ask for help too.
Yeah, I find people are always afraid.
They are. Yeah, I was afraid when I first started. I thought if I asked for help, I would not get hired back. They'd be like, oh, she's not competent. But I think that we would rather staff ask for help and like before they get into the weeds or before they like are struggling, so that we can help. Because I was in a leadership role last year at the virtual school, and sometimes I'd have staff asking for help and it was great. I was able to help them and they had a smooth semester. And then I'd have a couple of staff who would be like the night before midterms were due asking how they use programs or how to do the reports. And I'm like, this wasn't the time to ask. Yeah. So don't wait to the last minute. And when you're like desperate, like, yeah, ask for help early and often if you need it.
And it's, yeah, that's really interesting too, because I see it from a different perspective in a coaching role. I swear it took almost all year just to kind of build relationships with people and get people to know who I was and in order to start getting people to reach out for that help. And so I was kind of finding I wasn't getting a lot of requests until towards the end of the year. And now, like, as school's starting to ramp up again, I am getting more requests now. So it is making me, like, pretty excited that, you know, it took a while to build those relationships, but now it's starting to really, really pay off, I think. So nice. That's exciting. But yes, please ask for help. If you have coaches out there, your coaches are sitting there waiting to help you.
I actually want to go back to that whole virtual leadership, because So I'm a leader in my school. And when you're in person, you see the people and you get that interaction and you get to know them. But when you're in a virtual world where some people didn't even want to be in that virtual world, how did that go? What did you do as a leader to kind of build those connections?
Yeah, it was really challenging. I'm not going to lie, because there was a lot of turnover. There were people who didn't want to be there. There were staff who were there just for one quad. So it was hard to get buy-in. And I also, they formed leadership roles at the end of the first quad. So like we weren't even there at the very beginning. So there were just like lots of obstacles to overcome and we were massive. So it was like little bit by little bit. I was fortunate to have staff who were willing to reach out. So like when I came into the role and I said, you know, I'm here, I was already known in the virtual school as a tech sort of support person.
Nice.
I had already been very like active in our group chats. And so people knew that they could come to me. And so there was already a relationship there. Might've been why they picked me. smart on admin's part. So people already knew that they could come to me. And then I think people found as they started asking questions and that I was quick to respond and that I had sound advice, more like it just, like Rachel said, that relationship kept building. So there was a core group of people that definitely we felt very much there was a community. There would tend to be the staff who were there all year. We did definitely struggle from quadmester to quadmester, like when there was new staff trying to bring them in. So like you'd meet with them before, let them know they could reach out to you, check in with them, connect them with their course teams and stuff like that. But it was hard, right? Because it felt very formal every time you wanted to meet with someone. You're like, let's set up a Google Meet.
Yep.
Or like, let's send this very formal email. There was no organic, and you couldn't see, I admit, like it was hard in person. You can see that LTO come in and they're frazzled and they look like they need help. You can be like, okay, I can help you because I can see that you're struggling. Let me help you. And that they had to actually reach out online because I couldn't see that. Or I'd get a min saying, hey, there's some stuff going on. We're getting parent complaints. Can you reach out? That's never the time you want your leader, your department head come in being like, hey, I've heard things. But that it's hard to know who's struggling and who isn't. So part of the reason why I'm saying ask for help, because we don't, especially in virtual, we can't tell who's struggling and who's not.
No, you can't. Yeah.
But I think that as a leader, I tried to make myself approachable. I tried to make myself seem present. I did at the beginning set up like Fridays at lunch if you wanted to hang out. No one came. So then I
tried that too. Don't worry.
No one wanted to eat lunch with me online. Like, I mean, we're already online all day. But I did have like drop-in hours every Monday. So I was available online. If you needed something, come and talk to me. And so that was like my informal way. Like, it wasn't a come have lunch. It was more like, I'm available. These are my office hours.
Nice.
And sometimes staff would come and check it out. And then we did monthly department meetings too. So that was another like drop-in point for people to check in with people. So I think we did all right. There was room for improvement, but yeah.
It's tough. It's certainly not easy. It's been a year. Now, how is your experience going to shape how you are as a leader in a building this year?
So I think I want to continue as a leader. I definitely want to continue to be someone that's visible and approachable. So making sure that I am someone who you're seeing in the Google groups or at PD, and like that someone who's involved and, you know, in the know, I guess. So people feel like they can ask you questions like, oh, I saw you were doing that. Can you answer that for me? And just letting staff know that you're there and available. Please do come and talk to me. I even already said, hey, I'm going to be in the building these 2 days. If you're there, drop by, I'll be around. So just like letting staff know where you are and that you're available to talk to. I think right now, like I did talk to my admin and say, like, I don't have a lot of big plans for our department. People are still struggling. We just need as leaders to let staff know we support them and that we're there to help them wherever they feel they need the help. Maybe that's technology. Maybe that's, you know, incorporating culturally responsive learning. Maybe that's they need some PD, whatever. But like our job is just to support the staff because some are really struggling. Many are coming off of leave. They took the year because they couldn't do it and are coming back dipping their toes in the water. So really just trying to be as supportive, come across as supportive as I possibly can and as an approachable person. And that's what I did online. And I want to keep doing that.
No, I think it will. I think that's a good approach.
Yeah, I would agree.
And to be honest, I don't know about you, but this summer was not long enough. I'm not totally ready to go back.
This was actually my first summer in years that I didn't teach summer school. I usually teach summer school. I've taught it online for a number of years because I can stay at home with my kids and still teach. And after the year that this was, I was like, I can't do it. I need the full 8 weeks. I need my time off. So yeah. The 8 weeks still didn't feel quite long enough. Like, I feel like maybe I need a little bit more time, but I'm also, my kids are driving me crazy. So I'm a little excited to go back.
I'm certainly excited for them to go back too. No more at home learning where I feel like I'm going crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
Any tech tools that you discovered along the way that you would recommend for teachers to check out? You're techie, I know.
I am techie, but I also feel like I listen to you guys so much that they're just going to be the same ones. Use Google Jamboard. I love jams. I love Jamboards. I used them regularly in my classrooms. Kahoot, Breakout EDU. I don't know if you guys talked about that on here. Maybe you did. I did. I loved Breakout EDU in person, like the kits.
Yes,
I was
the actual kit.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that in person. I love escape rooms. I'm super nerdy like that. So I loved doing those. I actually wrote a couple for Canadian history because it's an American-based company. So I was like making them. And maybe we'll get to do them in person this year. But there's a digital platform. So I know that my students loved when I would put them in breakout rooms and they'd have the link for their breakout ED and they'd try and race each other through the escape room. So that one was, those are fun. They've got team building ones and subject based ones. If you haven't checked them out, I'm sure someone will put them in the show notes.
Yes, I will.
I loved, and I could do that also if I had a small class. I could do, we did it as a class. We'd go through the breakout room, but it was, that was a fun one that I'll keep using.
I actually just renewed my subscription for Breakout EDU with the goal of using the digital ones this year.
They're great. And you can also, pitching it a little bit, so you can also, so you as a teacher can make ones if you like want, or you can have students make them as well, like as an assignment. So there's lots of different ways for you to use that platform. I mean, I love everything G Suite though too, right? So I used Google Slides to make templates for my students. So we did infographics. I'm an English teacher, right? So infographics, news reports.
Now, I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I've logged into Breakout EDU, but I've never run one with my class before.
Really? Oh, no. They have so many science ones though, man.
I know, and they look a lot of fun. It always seems like a lot of work to set it up with the kits. I don't know if that is the case.
No, that is true.
It takes a bit of time, yeah.
But not the digital ones. You just press the play button and they go.
Yeah, I know. It probably didn't help that I wasn't in a classroom this past year. I think I probably would have explored it if I was. But yeah, I think, I don't know, that's a really sort of neat tool.
The setup time is totally worth it. You should see how these kids engage with the Breakout EDU kits. They love it.
They really do.
I've seen a number of the science department members in the last school I was in setting these kits up. And it always kind of put me off a little bit seeing how much work went into getting one lesson ready for the next day. But I know the kids do engage with it a lot and I know it is worth the time, but it is a huge time commitment.
It is. Yeah. And I often, because our class sizes are large in Ontario, right? Like we're over 30 a lot of the time. That's a large group to do a breakout kit with. So I would set up two and I'd often like try to get a classroom across the hall and so I could like monitor the two of them. So it was double the work, but I don't know. I loved it. And the students really engaged with it a lot. Like I often did them to review a topic. One time I was reviewing rhetorical devices and they had a test the next day. We're gonna have to do a close reading. And so the pieces that they found and the final piece in the box was the speech they were going to have to like analyze the next day. So there was like extra motivation. If you find all the pieces, like you'll know what the speech is for tomorrow's test. And yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd love to be able to do that again in person. There are a lot of things I'm looking forward to in person, seeing my students, right? I teach secondary, so I didn't know what a lot of my students looked like, seeing colleagues and that feeling of community and like maybe being able, they said we can use shared materials. So hoping that I can do stuff like that with my, as long as they socially distance and wear their masks, then maybe we can do some of those fun things again.
Yeah, no, there's definitely aspects of in person that I'm super excited for. Yeah, I'm hopeful. Trying to stay hopeful.
We've talked a lot about what we would take going forward, but what are you ditching? Like, what is stuff that you did last year virtual that you totally want to ditch this year going back to in-person?
So this was a tough question. This is a tough question for me because I did love a lot of the things that I learned, the chunking, the headspace. So like you being more mindful, taking time to do minds on and check in with my students in the morning. So there's a lot of things that I want to take back with me. And I'm not sure. I think what I would ditch is, if possible, any of those things that I would do online, like if there was a Jamboard, but I'd rather have chart paper or whiteboards in my classroom. Like, I want to, as much as possible, take the learning from that virtual place and get it back in person. I was also struggling with the idea of, one thing that I really relied on and I loved with, and maybe as tech people, you can help me here. We used Google Meet in our board, and there are breakout rooms. And I loved doing that with my large classes of like 35 students. I could put them in small groups and have them talk. So I loved breakout rooms in the Google Meets, but I don't know how to make that translate in a live classroom. How do I take my class of 35 and get them in small groups when they have to socially distance? So I feel like, I'm not sure that's not a ditch, but it's like, how do I do that? How do I translate this great tool that I have online to a classroom where normally I just have them in groups, but that they're probably going to be too close. I have to make sure they're facing forward and in rows.
So what we did at our school, because I mean, you still want to include some group work, is we would use the tools. So like Jamboard or, you know, whatever template it is we've come up with, but then the groups are going to be arranged based on the seating arrangement, which sucks. But so it means the people you're geographically closest to are going to be in your group.
And they can just swivel in their seats a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they can't move their desks and chairs.
No, yeah. They can't. But it's less ideal and it's less natural. So you don't always get that conversation, but it works.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting problem to think about because you're right. The breakout rooms in Google Meet or Zoom or like whatever video conferencing software you're using do afford you a lot of positives over being in the classroom. Like, it's really nice to be able to send them out to a space where it's just the few of them and it's quiet and they can hear each other talk. Like, even in a classroom, when you're putting kids into small groups, there's all this other noise and distraction around them that, yeah, it actually almost works better in a virtual space, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the teacher, like in the breakout rooms, I wasn't in them. So there was no teacher moderating or like checking on them. So I felt like community building happened a lot better as well, because they could talk. They didn't necessarily have to talk about what I asked them to talk about. They could talk about other things as well.
Now, I wonder if that's something where we can take them outside and then spread out over a much bigger space so that they'll be distanced and chatting with one another and actually seeing each other.
Of course, we're in Canada, so that will only be for not so long.
No, fall and spring. And really, when I say spring, I mean like May. Yeah, it's not an easy fix when you're kind of in this in-between stage of having to still have protocols in place, but you're not virtual.
Back to the original question of ditching. I don't think I think that so much growth happened for myself this year. I learned so many things and I was able to incorporate so many new teaching strategies that I don't have anything I want to ditch. I want to find a way to incorporate all of that learning back into my classroom.
That's a positive spin. I like it.
It is. Yeah, I was just thinking with the Google Meet thing, it's such a shame because you can't get them all on Google Meets in the same room because you're going to get feedback everywhere. But maybe it could be even just rooms set up in Google Chats where it's not the same like talking face to face, but
it's just something I'm going to miss. I used it a lot, like because I taught writer's craft. And so there was so much discussion and people wanted time to discuss that I had to put them in breakout rooms and I'd give them time to talk and to share. I'm not teaching writer's craft again this year, but I am teaching other courses where I would want discussions to happen. And when you do it whole class, you tend to get just the same kids talking. And so it was a strategy I leaned on a lot last year that I don't necessarily have the option to do this year.
No, that one will be challenging for sure. I would Love to hear your take on virtual schools.
Oh, do I like them or not?
Ooh. Yeah. Longevity-wise, what do you think? Should it be a long-term possibility or option for students? And what should it look like?
Yeah. So I do think virtual learning is here to stay. And I think that's a good thing. I think there were a lot of students at the virtual school who found success. School isn't always a safe place for students. They don't feel safe walking in the halls or eating their lunches or even in the classrooms, where the virtual space gave them somewhere safe to be. They got to meet people they wouldn't normally have met. That was something that happened in my writer's craft course, because it's not always run in secondary. And so they got to meet students from all over the board who had similar interests. So I think that there is a lot of pros to virtual learning being a safe place, a place that can run programs that maybe other schools don't. And however, we do have the issue of accessibility. Not everyone has a dedicated learning space in their home, has technology, reliable Wi-Fi. So the problem obviously becomes you have a certain profile of student who can access virtual learning. So the question is, how does this look so that everyone can access it? So maybe it is that we need to have a physical building for some students to come to, so they have some like technology they can access, Wi-Fi that they can access. They can see their teachers every once in a while. I like the idea of having a virtual hub, right? Where staff and administrators are in one place. We're creating our lessons, teaching, but we don't necessarily need actual classroom space. But then students can come by if they want, or they can use the resources that are at the school so that they can access it themselves. Yeah. But I do think it is the way of the future. And you also have students who like want to do things asynchronously. That's what the e-learning campus came out of for our board, right? Students who are professional athletes, people who are professional musicians, right? Who are traveling a lot and they want to do learning while pursuing a career that they're already investigating. So I think it helps a lot of students. There's a lot of students that virtual learning works for. And so why not offer it for them? It doesn't work for everyone, right? So we continue to do in-person learning. But I know our school board and probably other boards and districts offer a variety of alternative programs for people who regular school just doesn't work for. Virtual learning can be that alternative.
Definitely.
I love the idea of a virtual hub. That's always been kind of my vision. As Caitlin, I was an e-learning teacher for a number of years, and it's not quite the same as the way we've run virtual learning, but I always wanted a piece of what we did with virtual learning this past year to be a part of e-learning so that there was a bit more regular connection with the kids and even just meeting synchronously online for an hour every week or something like that. But as we kind of did this past year, the idea of a virtual hub just became more and more apparent that we need it. And we need to have a place where kids can come in and meet up with their teachers, ask questions, or for the hands-on kind of subjects like science and tech, the kids can come in and actually do stuff too and do some of that hands-on learning, because it just isn't the same in virtual space.
And then I was like, say, meet up for a field trip, right? Like everyone meet at the virtual hub and we'll get on a bus and we'll go somewhere, right? Because those were kind of the elements that you kind of miss in virtual learning, I think, are the hands-on and the experiential stuff.
And even like the community for teachers. Like, I don't know about you, but when I'm isolated and working in my little silo, it's hard for me to get new ideas and to bounce ideas off of other people and to kind of, you know, so I missed, especially when we were stuck at home during closures, I really missed that interaction.
Yeah, I agree. I did as well.
I would agree as well. But my introverted self is also kind of grieving the loss of being able to be at home in my little bubble. So yeah, but I do agree. Like, it's nice to be able to just go and talk to someone else and say, hey, I got this idea. Like, what do you think? And bounce ideas off of each other.
And also just be social. Like, I feel like a lot of teachers have friends who are teachers because you just like talk at work and have lunch together. And I think we missed a lot of that this year, the like social aspect of teaching.
Now, what's really cool about our school board is we do have a bit of a virtual hub this year for our virtual teachers. So they're all going to be placed in one place. And the coaching team that I'm working with, I just found out, is going to have a room there as well. So that's kind of really neat that I'm going to be able to hopefully work with some of the virtual teachers a little bit more.
And it really helps them, like, you're physically there sometimes. So that, I think, will really bridge some of those challenges that you've experienced.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm pretty excited that we have a room there. And yeah, we'll see what it looks like. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't been there.
That's really great. I'm glad that they're doing that, because I think that was something that was needed. Like I said, you couldn't tell who was struggling. You couldn't just pop by and ask questions or see what people were doing. So that's really exciting.
Yeah. And the way they have it set up, students aren't going to be able to come in, at least not yet at the beginning. I don't know if that's going to change as the school year goes on. But for now, it's just kind of a hub, as I understand it, for virtual teachers to work from. But at least they're all going to be together in one place, which is going to make a world of difference.
So what would you say is your biggest takeaway from this past year of virtual?
So I think the biggest takeaway for me is like making space in my classrooms for community building, for wellness and mindfulness. Like I used to be a teacher who was very focused on getting through the curriculum, getting through the novel, getting through the, and using as much of my time for school. You can't see, I'm using air quotes, school. and this year, I saw so many of my students struggling with anxiety and depression, with isolation. We really got to see, you know, some of our students who don't have a lot of those supports at home and realizing that, yes, you know, my job isn't just to teach the curriculum. My job is to be a safe space, create a community for my students. And so I think that was like the best thing I could have learned from this pandemic is that, you know, my job isn't just teach them stuff. It's to be a place and a person, a safe person for them to be with. And I think I'll continue to do that for the rest of my career, like making sure even when this pandemic's over, like making sure that paramount in my classroom is that it's a safe place. It's an inclusive place. We want to build a community. And then on, you know, once we have that, let's then do some learning.
Love that. That's very powerful thinking.
Well, thank you so much, Caitlin, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Time has just passed by super quick. So yeah, it's been great.
Well, thank you. I've been happy to be here.
So what we'll do is we'll be sure to include any of the links or resources that we talked about today here in our show notes. You can access our show notes for this episode at edugals.com/61. That's edugals.com/61.
And if you like what you heard today, feel free to share this with a colleague or a friend. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss out on any future content.
And as always, we would love to hear from you. So if you'd like to maybe share some of your learnings from this past year with virtual or hybrid or whatever kind of learning format you were doing in this past year, you can go onto our Flipgrid at edugals.com/flipgrid and leave us a message there. Or you can go onto our website at edugals.com and leave us a written comment there.
Thanks for listening and see you next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of our EduGals podcast. Show notes for this episode are available at edugals.com. That's edugals.com. We'd also love to hear your feedback, so leave us a message on our website.
And if you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe and consider leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep being awesome and try something new.